And where will we be this week? 1 Peter chapter 2. I will read first, chapter 2 of 1 Peter, verse 1. Wherefore, laying aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envies and all evil speakings, as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that you may grow thereby. If so, ye have tasted that of the Lord, that the Lord is gracious. Verse 3, if so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious, right? To whom coming as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious. You also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house, an holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Wherefore also it is contained in the Scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect and precious, and that he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but to them which is disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto they also were appointed. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from the fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that were, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may be made by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or to governors, or to them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that as well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your own masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. For this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it when you be buffeted for your faults, you shall take it patiently. But if you, when you do well and suffer for it, you take it and you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving an example that you should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judges righteously, who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sin, should live unto the righteousness by whose stripes you were healed. For you were as sheep going astray, but are now returned unto the shepherd and bishop of your souls. Pretty powerful stuff in here. And some things that's been taught that isn't exactly right, and I think it'll help you see it a little better. If we go back to the first verse, well, first of all, I need to pick up the last two verses of the first chapter, because those two there are pointed in when he spoke about it and said, Peter said, he said, because all flesh is grass, and the glory of man is as the the blossom, right? So the word grass is vegetation. The word flower is blossom, literally in the language. So the flower of the vegetation, and the vegetation withers, and the blossom thereof falls away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. And this is the word which by the gospel is preached to you. Now, he's telling you, if all this is about flesh, all these fleshly things really don't matter, he said, because they're going to fade and fall away. Everything's going to wither and go away, right? Talking of the flesh. Now we go into, and that's why the word wherefore is there. Wherefore or therefore, everything that was said prior to this, he said, now you should realize you should lay aside all malice. Now the word malice, what does it mean to you? Well, I'll give you a meaning. Okay, what was that word? With evil intentions? Okay, the language literally says in the Strong's to, it talks about depravity, malignantly, or a desire to injure. Okay, to say something, to have malice in your heart is have a desire to hurt somebody or injure somebody with what you're saying or doing. So laying aside all this malice, all this depravity, malignity, or desire to injure anybody, and all guile. What does the word guile mean to you? And these are English words that the King James put in here. They wouldn't put the right words, but they put what they wanted. What does guile? Guile is deceit, absolutely. Guile is deceit. So get rid of all this other stuff and get rid of the deceit in your mouth, okay? And all the hypocrisies and all the envies or jealousies is what it should say. And all defamations, okay? Not evil speakings, but all the defamations. It's defaming someone. Okay? As newborn babes, and here's what I say we're supposed to start. We're supposed to be innocent as a newborn baby in our thinking process. We should desire or intensely crave the possession of the sincere or the pure milk of the Word. So he's saying it should give us a desire to crave as a new baby desires milk, and they want it constantly, don't they? That's the way we should desire the sincere milk or the pure milk of the Word, that you what? Huh? Yeah, cross out the word in front of it, may. There's no maybe to it. If you desire the sincere milk of the Word, if you desire it, you don't think you're going to get it? And if you get it, do you think you won't grow? How could you possibly not grow with the milk of the Word? That milk is going to make the baby grow, isn't it? Common sense. All you got to do is feed the baby, and that baby's going to grow. If so be that you have tasted that the Lord is what? The word gracious isn't a real good word here. It should be good. The word is good. That the Lord is good. Comes right out of the Psalms, Psalms 34, 8, Psalm 135, verse 3, and 100, verse 5. All three of those verses say, taste and see that the Lord is good. Okay, and there's more of them, but that's enough of them, you know, to prove the point. Verse 4, to whom coming to a living stone, and the word as and the first part of unto, the UN, shouldn't be there. It says, to whom coming to a living stone, disallowed or disapproved, indeed by humanity. Humanity's never going to approve God, are they? Because humanity wants to be in control. It's the I, the ego of man, that wants to sit on the throne. And the ego of man will never sit on the throne of God. I promise you that. They might sit on thrones on this earth, but they will never sit on thrones in the kingdom of God. But chosen by God. Okay, this stone that they disapproved, God chose the man Jesus to be that stone, didn't he? He was chosen by God, and he was precious. You also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual, or should be the spiritual house, right? And the word for spiritual here is non-carnal. We were built as a non-carnal house. We were not built to be carnal, were we? A holy priesthood to offer up what? Carnal sacrifices? No, non-carnal sacrifices. So it would be spiritual. Okay, most people don't realize what a spiritual sacrifice is. Most people think giving money, eating communion, the wafer and the juice, being baptized, stand up, clapping your hands, raising your hands, dancing, singing. They think that's a spiritual, and there is nothing spiritual about those physical things that you do. A spiritual sacrifice is something that's going on in the spirit realm. And where is the spirit realm? It's within you. See, it's not out there external someplace. It's not the external things you do. And I agree that if you are truly letting God work in your spirit, or if he's working in your spirit, you will do things differently than other people with non-carnal thinking. Yeah, you'll do it out of the Spirit of God. And you will do things that the regular, quote, church world says is spiritual. You won't be doing those things because you realize it's futile. If me dancing up and down and clapping my hands and singing and yelling and screaming, if all those things would bless God, then why did he have to go through all the things he set up? It don't make sense, does it? See, I have to clear my mind. The only thing I can worship God is in spirit. Is that true? According to the book, he seeks those to worship him in spirit and truth. Well, to worship in spirit, I have to be in spirit. I have to understand the spirit and have to realize that we are spiritual beings. And if I understand I'm a spiritual being, then I have to go inside where that spirit dwells and get into that thought process that the spirit has within me, in tune with the spirit of God, so I can understand. See, if I was talking Greek, although I don't know how to talk Greek and Hebrew and all these foreign German and Russian, if I was talking to someone in Russian, although Russian is a language, and they didn't understand it, what good would it do? I'm not saying God doesn't understand, but I'm saying we don't understand what we're saying most of the time. We're saying we're being spiritual. People say, oh, come to church and worship with us. They're not worshiping God. They're worshiping a tradition of man. They're worshiping idolatry, you know, that they have by going to a building and thinking that makes them spiritual. I'm spiritual throughout eternity. When your spirit is made alive, when would it ever die? It can't, because it's part of His spirit. They don't understand. They think they have to go into a building on Sunday morning to be holy. We're holy because He said so. That nothing has to do with what I did or what I'm going to do. Look what it said back in the 16th verse of the first chapter. Because it is written, you will be holy because I am holy. Now, why are you holy? Because God said so, right? He said, you will be holy because I'm holy. That's why I'm holy. I ain't got no other reason. See, and everybody's trying to put things to it. And if I have to do something to become holy, that means it's done by works. And Ephesians 2 clearly said, it's not by works, right? We got to catch on to these things and realize. Now, if someone comes up to you and quotes a verse to you, and you have a better understanding than they have of that truth, if you let them speak that to them just because you don't want to cross their ways or rock the boat or muddy the waters or stir the waters up a little bit, do you realize what you're letting them do to you? You're denying what God said. If God gave you a truth and you know it's a truth, how could you stand there and let someone deny that truth and agree with them? I can't do it.
That's why we don't sing those songs.
That's why I can't sing most of the songs. I tell them, the devil loves them. He wrote most of them. It was carnal mind. I mean, he wrote them. So I just can't agree with them. If I know there's a deeper truth to it and God has revealed some of that truth to me, I can't agree with someone else. I could say, that's what you want to believe, but that's not what I believe. I can see something a little differently.
You can't sing I'll Fly Away if you're not.
No, because I know I'm not flying away. I still haven't sprouted any wings on my shoulders, so I'm not flying. Okay, where was we at? We left off in 5. Here we to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. Now, acceptable to God eliminates a whole bunch of what people are offering up this day. Wouldn't you agree? Because there's a whole lot of nasty smelling stuff being offered up on the altar today. Okay? They're offering up what they want to. It's just like Cain and Abel from the very beginning. Abel gave up a blood sacrifice and Cain decided he was going to do it his way, and he took vegetables and stuff like that and offered up fruit of the ground, the flesh. That's not what God asked for. He worked up. See, the natural man worked it up his way. Well, I'll just do it. It's easier if I just go ahead and God will accept it. God will accept what He said He'll accept, a spiritual sacrifice. And that is inside, see.
It's not by works or by power, but by my spirit.
Zechariah chapter 2.
It all comes together.
It all comes together. But see, there's so many people that only have pieces of God, and when the pieces they got don't look right, don't fit together, so they put together like part carnal, part spirit, and God looks like some kind of a Frankenstein monster by the way they put him together, because He loves you and He is love, but He's going to burn you in hell and torture you and torment you through eternity. I mean, see, that's a Frankenstein view of God. He's bad and good both, you know, and He's not. He's God. Okay, into verse 6, He said, wherefore, because of what's just been said, also it is contained in the Scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect and precious, and he that believes on Him or into Him shall not be what? Ashamed is the correct word. Confounded. It should be ashamed. I shall not be ashamed. When everything comes to the end, the ones who truly walk in this understanding will not be ashamed, will they? We might be abused and spit on and mistreated in this lifetime, but when it comes down to what matters, because this time, lifetime is but a vapor, like James said, it's gone. But eternity is what we're working after. We're working and getting ourselves, our thinking lined up with God throughout eternity. Once it's lined up, it's not ever going to change again. Okay, verse 7. To you, therefore, which believe, he is precious. But to them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disapproved, the same is made the head of the corner. So the stone that God chose. See, now, what people don't understand, they still see this as individual. And it is not individual. The stone that was approved was the first fruit. It wasn't the head with the body separate from it. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you separate the head from the body, what happens? It dies. The head and body has never been separated. Only in our understanding have we been separated from God. God has been resident in us from the very beginning. So if we understand when he says the stone that was chosen of God, right? He said a chief cornerstone, elect and precious. So we know that that stone which God put there and was disallowed by the, or disapproved of by the church system, the religious system, we know that. It's a stone of stumbling or an occasion for apostasy. Now, see, the stumbling, the word stumbling makes it sound like it's just going to trip you up a little bit. But when you look at it, when it says the occasion of apostasy is what the Greek language says, that means it gives me a reason to lay down. Because God's way is not always the easiest way. Would you agree to that? So it gives you an occasion to be lazy. See? You can procrastinate all you want, but you're only hurting yourself. See? This is not an easy walk. Anybody that thinks it's easy is hallucinating on something. But anyway, it's an occasion to stumble or an occasion for apostasy and a rock of offense. And they're offended when you contradict what they say the easy way is, see? Which stumble at the word. See, they're stumbling at what? The word. Not the words I say, but the words that God said. That's what causes them to stumble or to be, or have their occasion for apostasy, to lay down. They stumble at the truth. Being disobedient, and the word disobedient here doesn't really tell you the full meaning of this Greek word. It literally means willfully and perversely disbelieving. Willfully and perversely disbelieving. Where it says disobedient, that doesn't tell it the way this language does. But it says they willfully and perversely, they know what they're doing and they don't care, they want to do it their way. You ever? Huh? A lot of people, like I say, I don't care what the Bible says, but this is what I think it says. They don't care what it says, they want to do it the way they want it because it's convenient to them. They can be lazy, they can walk in apostasy and feel comfortable there. Well, if you can, go for it, but I can't handle it. Just call me by your name so I can be approved, see? Just call me a Christian and I'll be all right. To work for yourself? And what's my saying? Justifying is just a lying, see? They're only lying to themselves when they try to justify something. That they're listening to their own ego because it makes them feel good. I'm going to tell you, serving God don't make you feel good, but it will make you there. It'll make you. Yeah. Right. And a false identity. Now, it says they stumble at the word being willfully and perversely disbelieving, whereunto or to which also they were what? Or ordained. Do you think they had a choice at it now? It says they were ordained according to the Greek language or appointed to even King James. If you're appointed to something, that wasn't your choice, was it? So really, they think they have a free will at this thing? And you know, that's something I've been getting a lot of people ask me about recently is this free will thing. It's not in the book, so why are you concerned about it? If it's not in the book, where do you think it came from? Out of the carnal mind, out of the pit, you know. So why do people worry about things that's not in the book? First of all, if you can capture everything in this book, you got her made. And if you haven't got the book taken care of yet, why are you worried about all the external stuff for? Okay, verse 9. He said, but you, we're not talking about the ones willfully and perversely disbelieving. He said, but you were a chosen generation or kind. You're a royal priesthood, right? You're a first fruit, correct? A kingly priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession is what that means, a peculiar people, a people for God's own possession. Wouldn't that be first fruit? Isn't all the first fruit offering, even in the shadows and types of the Jewish culture, all the first fruit went to who? To God. Now, in turn, God didn't necessarily come and pick up all the sheep and all the cattle and all the camels and goats and everything, did he? Who got them? The first fruit. Well, the priesthood. But see, that priesthood was corrupt. And that's why they did all the things they did. But the priesthood he's talking about, the reality of the Melchizedek priesthood, all this that is first fruit unto God, all of it comes back to them. You see what I'm saying? All of it was sent in a pattern to the priesthood. And he said, you're a royal priesthood. You're a kingly priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you should what? The word show forth should say tell, declare, or divulge what? The praises or the virtue of him who has called you out of darkness or ignorance into the marvelous light, which is truth. Correct? I'll say it again. But you are a chosen kind, a kingly priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you should tell, declare, or divulge the virtue of him who has called you out of ignorance into his marvelous truth. That makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense. See, it's right there if people would just listen to the Spirit of God show you and lead you through this. But people are so apathetical, they like to do it the easy way. And you know, the path of least resistance creates rivers and men crooked, don't it? And that's what they do. They, rather than doing the homework, they would rather pick up and say, King James said it, and that's good enough. They've never studied to show themselves approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing or accurately handling the word of truth. They're just willing to say anything to get through it so they don't bring controversy. Well, I'm going to tell you, Jesus didn't come to bring peace to earth. He said he came to set a fire on the earth. He came to stir things up, didn't he? Because the way that the Jewish nation was taking things was not the way God wanted them to be. He knew they would do it, and he let them walk in their own mistakes and error, because he needed it for a season. Need the negative so you can see the positive and see the difference. Right? He used it as examples. It was all set forth by God. And it said they were appointed to it in verse 8, right? If they were appointed to it, they really don't have a choice in it, do they? So it's no big deal. God's getting what he wants. Now, verse 10. Which in times past were not a people... He's still talking about us, but are now the people of God, which has, what's that say? Verse 10, which have not obtained mercy. The word obtained is not correct. The word obtained, if you exchange that for the word it should be there, is experienced. See, I didn't obtain anything. I experienced it because he gave it to me. Mercy and grace is a gift of God, isn't it? I didn't do anything to obtain it. God gave it to me. So I experience it, and that's what that word should say. Which God, which had not obtained mercy, but now, which have not obtained mercy, but now have experienced mercy. See, we hadn't experienced it yet, but now we have. See, so I can't say I'm waiting on mercy. Why? If I say I'm waiting on someone to show me mercy or God to give me mercy, if I'm asking God for mercy, I'm saying, God, you haven't done your job yet. You know what? I'm not brave enough to say that. Because I know God has already finished his work. The seventh day he rested. Hello, he's still resting. God's not worried about it. We have to catch on to this thing. Okay? Verse 11, it goes on to say, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and resident aliens, abstain from carnal lusts, which war against the what? The spirit." They war against the soul. Isn't going to war. The flesh isn't worrying about this. Excuse me. The flesh is not warring against the soul because the soul is flesh. It's fleshly. It's a mixture. And isn't a double-minded thing, the duality? Isn't that confusion and everything messed up? But the soul is messed up. The spirit is pure. So this flesh is lusting against the spirit. It's the word psuche, and if you look at it, it says spirit very plainly. Okay, verse 12. "Having your manner of life," not your conversation, but your manner of life, "honest among the Gentiles." See, so we should live among the heathen and be just as honest as we are in church. Okay? Everybody thinks you come to church, you got to be real good, and when you go out, you can do what you want. But we should live the same way. When you see someone in a congregation, in a meeting, in a Bible study, they should be no different than if you see them on the street, should they? Otherwise, there's a word for that. What is it?
Hypocrite.
Thank you. "Having your manner of life honest among the Gentiles, in order that whereas they slander you as evildoers, they may, by your good works," or cross out that word "may" too, that shouldn't be there, "that they by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation." So in other words, he says, you know, if you live the way you're supposed to, even if they say evil things against you, one of these days when it all comes to the end, they're going to glorify God that's in you. Okay? Still God. Verse 13, "Submit yourselves to every ordinance." Literally, it should say, obey every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king, as supreme, or to governors, or to them that are sent by him for the what? Punishment? That's not a good word. Because if you look at the word, guess what it really says? For the vindication of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. They like to use that word punishment. King James loves to punish and burn and torment and torture. That's their mindset. That's that carnal mind that they're working out of. He come, and that's what the governors are here for, to help them. See, leadership is not here to hurt you. It's here to help you. I mean, that's the right thinking. Even though men corrupt it and do bad things, that's not the purpose of it, is it? Okay, verse 15. "Because so is the will of God." That's the will of God, to do things. To come and vindicate the evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. See, both get a reward, but it's not that they're being punished. It's they're being vindicated because God used them. Didn't it just say earlier in the chapter that they were appointed for these things? They were chosen and set there? They were ordained for these things? How can they receive punishment for something that God chose them to do? I know that don't go with the church thinking, but I'm sorry, that's what God's thinking is. This is His will. "That with well-doing," or doing right, "you," cross out that word "may," "you put to silence," or "you muzzle," "the ignorance of foolish humanity." By doing right, you muzzle the ignorance of foolish humanity. Did he say fight with them? See, he just said, by doing the right thing, you muzzle the ignorance of carnal man. Verse 16. "As free," he said, "you should live as a free man." Even if you're a slave, you should live as a free man. "And not using or possessing your liberty or freedom as a cloak of maliciousness, but as servants or slaves of God." Okay? You remember what that word liberty means? Freedom. You remember my little saying I use all the time? Freedom is not doing what you want, but living within God's limitations and boundaries and being happy there. You know what the Greek language says here? In Thayer's lexicon, it says this: living as we should, not as we please. That's what that liberty means. Living as we should, not as we please. Goes right along with the saying I use for years.
Living as a love slave.
Yes, absolutely. Living as a love slave. Verse 17, Honor all. Cross out the word men. That's an added word. Honor all. Are you supposed to mistreat women? Of course, that's what our society thinks. You know, the human society thinks women should be dishonored. They seem like it, don't they? Most of the time, they do. Love the brotherhood. Don't fear God, but revere God. Reverence God. Revere God. And honor the king. Servants, be subject, or literally obey your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. You know what the word froward means? It means warped and perverse. So even if your masters are warped and perverse, he said, obey them. Whatever they get, got you to do, you got to do it. Because this is thankworthy. Now the word is not thankworthy. It's the word charis, grace. It's the word for grace, 5485. For this is grace. If a man for conscience toward God endure grief and suffering wrongfully or unjustly, this is grace. That's when grace comes into effect. When you're mistreated out of what God does in your heart, that divine influence in your heart reflects into your lifestyle, this is grace in action. See, it's not grace as a noun like everybody talks about it, but it's a grace as a verb. There's action, there's legs, there's feet and hands on this thing. So whenever they treat you wrongfully, this is grace in God's eye. This is the grace of God coming out of you. See, you're showing people when they do you wrong, you're standing there. That's His honor and glory. He's shining through. Verse 20, because what glory is it when you be buffeted for your faults? So if you do something wrong, what glory do you get out of that? Nothing. You deserve it. You shall take it patiently, but if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is what? It's the word acceptable. Okay? Acceptable. And let me think. Look at that word for me and see if that isn't the same word as grace. You got it there, right in front of you? The word acceptable. I think it's the word grace too. Verse 20 at the end of it where the word is acceptable there. Okay, that's, see, the same word, this is grace from God. That's what it should say. I thought it was in my mind. I wasn't sure, but I'd lost something there, but I thought it was right. I wanted to make absolutely sure I said it right. So I'm going to read this again, verse 20. Because what glory is it when you are buffeted for your faults and you take it patiently? There's no glory in that. But if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is grace from God. That's what it should say. This is grace. The word acceptable is the same word grace that they use thankworthy in verse 19. It's the word grace. Grace from God. Doesn't that make so much more sense? Grace from God. Because, verse 21, into this thing were you called. Into what thing? Into grace and into the sufferings of God. True or false? If you don't suffer with me, you'll not reign with me. Correct? You were called to this because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Hello? So we should go through some stuff, shouldn't we? Whether we like it or not. If we don't experience, and again, it's back into that experience thing. You have to experience it. We experience grace, not obtain grace. We experience it. Verse 22, who did no sin, neither was guile or deceit found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but not committed, but surrendered to him, that he just surrendered to him that judged righteously. The word himself wasn't there. They added that in. He just surrendered to him that judges righteously. What's he talking about? He submitted to his Father. He submitted to the Spirit of God. Right? As you're supposed to do every day. Verse 24. Who his self, not own, the word own isn't there. Who his self bare our sin, not plural. Come on. This word is not plural, it's singular. We only have one sin, and that's disbelief. Everything else is a result of my disbelieving. You see what I'm saying? If I believed what God said, if I believed God, I wouldn't be doing those things, would I? See? So the only sin there is a sin of disbelief. And that's already been taken care of. Okay? He bare our sin in his own body on the tree in order that we, being dead to that sin, should live to righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. It's already a done deal. You were healed. Bang. End of discussion. I'm healed because of his stripes. His suffering took care of it, didn't it? And see, the healing that he's talking about, and I know the church world uses this, oh, it takes diseases from your body. But the only thing it did, it healed your thinking process. It healed my thinking process. Now I'm no longer carnal in my thinking because of his sufferings. He took my disbelief onto him. He didn't take adultery, fornication, drugs, alcohol, lying, stealing, and carry it to the cross. He took my disbelief. And he carried that to the cross with him. And that's what set me free. Man, that's the only thing that set anybody free, is there a thinking process. Oh, God. They repented, see? He done it for me. I couldn't do it. He did it for me. So by his stripes, you were healed. It was in the thinking process. He took us back and placed us as we were with God before the foundation of the world. He put us back in that time before Adam. He put us back into Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, 2, and 3. That's where he put us back to. Verse 25, because you were sheep, didn't say gone astray. What did he say? Going. We were going astray. Yeah, we were on our way. But are now returned. Did he say someday you were going to return? See? We were with him. We were going astray. But you are now is a key word. They were returned. We're already back. We're not coming back. We are back. To the shepherd and bishop or overseer of your, not soul, but your spirit. He's not interested in souls. And it boils me inside when I hear all these people talking about saving souls and doing all these crazy things. It has nothing to do with it. God ain't saving souls. It's the spirits. He's not into the mixture realm. They are. God help them, that's all I can say, because it's the only one that can. Okay, I'm done. Anybody got any comments?